And now, the Corner Office. Political press attaché Joe Dellerone gets in-depth on the issues with Grand Chief Joe Tequiro Norton.
Wakunuradu and welcome to the Corner Office, a little event that we do once in a while to catch up with the Grand Chief. And though there's lots to talk about today, we're going to be specific about a meeting that took place in Six Nations last week, which would have been Friday. What would last Friday be? October the 1st, I believe it was.
I think so.
Either way, you were in Six Nations with several other Grand Chiefs and other chiefs taking part in a meeting with the Canada Border Services Agency. And I'd like to talk about that because I know you did report to Chief and Council, talked about it, and said that you went in and actually got quite surprised at how things turned out, and it turned out to be interesting. So we'll let you speak about that in your words, and then we'll ask some questions. Yeah.
Well, as you said, I was surprised, but I was also, as a result of the surprise, I got really upset at the tone of the discussion that was going on. I'll say my fellow chiefs that were there were kind of like in a cooperative mode, which is good. Well, but at the same time, the cooperative issues that they were discussing didn't necessarily match the, the frame of mind that Ganawagi is in terms of when we cross the border, you know, especially coming back into Canada and the kind of treatment and the kind of problems we encounter on a daily basis, because daily people go back and forth. It's not just once a week or a handful here, a handful there. Daily basis, people are coming and going, you know, whether it's to Plattsburgh, Champlain, Ganyange, you know, wherever it may be, and they're coming back. In any event, the tone of the discussion was very, it's like cooperative in terms of speaking to CBSA officials, in terms of, you know, finding solutions to these issues about the inconsistency from border to border to border, which is a good thing to point out, because you had representation there, you know, from Ontario and Quebec, and discussing, you know, the problems they encounter. And it was more specifically geared towards Akwesasne. In one hand, which it should be, because that's, you know, that's a major issue. I mean, our people go to Akwesasne and they also encounter the same matters too, as well as the residents of Akwesasne on the American and the Canadian side. And as we know, Akwesasne is subdivided into five different jurisdictions, you know, along with different laws and all kinds of different compliance issues. So it makes life very difficult for them there. And they should have something uniquely developed for themselves. But let's not take away from the fact that, you know, there are other Ganyonge Haga, there are other Ugunhue, you know, right along the international Canadian-U.S. border, and that must be taken into consideration, and that there needs to be an understanding, a clear understanding that, you know, a lot of the stuff that applies in Akwesasne, because it's unique locale, also applies to all of us, simply because Mohawk Nation territory, Iroquois territory, Odinosuni territory extends both sides of the border, and in our historic continuance of the utilization of our land on both Canada and the U.S., you know, we have continued to pursue the fact that you know, we're at home no matter where we are on both sides of the border. The border is there for somebody else, not there for us. Unfortunately, they apply the same rules to us as they would anybody else. There's no special treatment. Only in the U.S. there's an understanding there on a large scale. On the Canadian side, very little, if anything at all. And I found this out, and what really upset, what really angered me, was what they call the category in which they place us, in a category known as IRAPA, which is IRPA,
Refugees
Policy or Protection Act. Immigrant Refugee Protection Act. That's where they placed us, because they said they found no other mechanism for it. The completely ignored the fact, you know, there's a Jay Treaty and there's this long continued history of our territory and our land.
Now, you've been Grand Chief off and on, mostly on, for the past 30-some-odd years now.
37 years.
37 right? years. And border crossing has always been an issue. And this is the first time I saw you actually, like, surprised. Like, wow, I didn't realize, and I guess nobody in the room realized that there was no real set rules for Native people, that they use this other policy, and you were pretty steamed up.
I was. It was. I said, this is insulting. This is totally unacceptable. I said, why were we not informed of this somewhere down the road? Or if you were looking for a category where to place us, then why didn't you consult with us? Why didn't you come to us, talk to us? And if you want, I guess, in all fairness to the CBSA, which is in control and of the, and they're a union too, of all the borders across Canada, the frontier, Canada and the U.S. They said, well, this is what the our bosses, you know, tell us. This is what Canada tells us is what we have to do. We have no control over the legislation and all that kind of stuff. Or maybe it's a convenient way of just ignoring the fact that, you know, there should be something straightforward on this and there should be an understanding. So I said I vowed that I was determined that was going to change and that they have to then begin to comply and begin to deal with us in the proper category, if you want to call it. I even hate to think of us as in some category. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really an insulting word to us.
When this happened, when this came up, and you said your piece, how did the other chiefs react? Did they know about this? Were they just as surprised?
I think Akwesasne knew something about it, but the other chiefs certainly didn't know anything about it. And they perked up, and if they knew about it, then they didn't say anything, you know. But they kind of they perked up after that, because I. You know, what I did is I fired them up, really, because the tone of the discussion was very tame, very, like, you know, compliant, and, yeah, we'll find a solution for this, for that, but we needed to really get to the heart of the matter before we can actually begin to talk about solutions. Now, of course, in the interim, until something happens on a grander scale, there is still the problem that, you know, today, if I leave this building and I go across the border and I come back, you know, I can be stopped and I can get into a big hassle, you know. The discussion I had in Akwesasne Six Nations a week ago does nothing to alleviate the present problem. And that will continue on. Hopefully, there will be some directives that will be given that, you know, at the border has to be more sensitivity to Native issues.
I know that there were representatives from the Border Security Border Services Agency from Ontario, from different regions, from Quebec,
yes.
And that you spoke to the Quebec representative, and maybe surprisingly or not, the representative said, "Well, I've never been to Caughnawaga, I've never spoken to anybody from Caughnawaga," and that created yet another opportunity to look at maybe some solutions or...
Well, we have to go beyond that, because there's two paths here that we're talking about. One is at the federal level and the law that's applied to the borders, and then there's the frontline Canadian Border Services agency that carries out the law. So they're two different sectors, but they both have their responsibilities and their duties. And we kind of like have fallen off the map as far as that is concerned. So one of the things that I was looking at is there's got to be a discussion at a federal level to start, you know, sensitize, hey, come on, you got to do something about this. Then there's another sector, and that's actually where all these border guards are trained. It's not far from here, Rigo. They're all trained in there, And there should be sensitivity training that goes on. Right there, right then and there, in that particular facility, even employing traditional, you know, people, you know, and can invoke the Turo wampum, a whole bunch of different things to advise them and say, this is what we're talking about.
Haven't they said they've done some of that in the past?
Yes, but they bring in professors and people like that who, you know, who simply give a historical overview of the relationship. But, you know, it's in one ear and out the other, so you really got to do something that captures the imagination. Then the directors in these particular regions over here, such as the one that I met from the Quebec region, they in turn also have to make it a part of their duties and responsibilities to ensure that the people who are working all the borders in Quebec, you know, where our people cross or others cross, are equipped in the sense, in terms of sensitizing and understanding the cultural side of things. You know, rather than just saying, oh, it's our job, you're like everybody else, or you come under IRAPA, you know, so, you know, it doesn't matter anymore, you know.
Did the, I know whenever you meet with people that you haven't met before, you usually bring the Turo wampum into discussion, and in this case, you did that, and also the Jay Treaty usually comes up. But the Jay Treaty, for our own people who aren't 100% sure, and I know there's younger people who are listening, they hear the word Jay Treaty, but yeah. The Jay Treaty is, the Americans have the recognition of that. So when you're going into the States, it's different. That was the one from the Paul K. Dibo case, which he fought in the, it went to the American courts back 90 years ago now.
Yeah.
And that was about the ability to go and work on both sides of the border unencumbered. Had to go to court. It was a long, long process and a victory. But coming back, the Canadian side still to this day doesn't respect the Jay Treaty. Or do they even know about the Jay Treaty?
I doubt. There may be some, you know, it wasn't even raised. It didn't even come up during the course of the discussion. But from what I gather, in terms of, again, you just got to go back and look at where the border crossing agencies, where the category they fit us into, and that's immigrants and refugees. So what does that say, what does that tell you? Either they know about the Jay Treaty and don't give a damn about it, or they have no idea about it. And that all goes back to whoever their training. It should be right from the beginning they should be told about these things that, you know, even though they may not recognize the Jay Treaty, there's still Native people who come and go, and especially the Mohawks, the Iroquois people, because we're right along the border all the way up, you know. But there's no sensitivity to that. And one of the things I raised during the discussion, I said basically, I threw out the War of 1812. Does anybody know about the War of 1812? And there was a nodding of heads, you know. And I, you know, I was very blunt about it. I said, damn it, if we had not been allies and entered into this war with the United States, you know, we saved your ass, is what I said. And things would be far different than what they are right now. And what do we get in return in respect and recognition of that? There's a monument in Ganawagi, which is good. It's great. It spells out what happened. I said, but on the other hand, we come and go in our homeland and look the way we're being treated. The U.S. treats us better than Canada does. And here we are talking nationhood, nation to nation, and all that kind of stuff, you know. So I said, it just doesn't make sense. And I said, I'm going to make sure that this changes. This is what we have to do to work at, to make sure that there are changes that are going to come about. And, you know, that's where I even turned to it was a young woman who's the, I forget what her title is, but she's responsible for the Montérégie,
yeah.
All the borders with border crossings within that, all the way down to the you know, like the Sherbrooke area, all down in that region. She's responsible for all that, and that's where I asked her the question. I said, and it was a challenge that I threw at her. I said, have you ever talked to somebody from Ganawagi? Have you ever been involved in any kind of disputes, anything that happens at a border? And she said no to everything. said, have you ever gone to Ganawaga? No. Then you should do your background. You should find out who you're talking to. So I did actually invite her, and she agreed. And we're making the arrangements right now as we speak. She will be coming here. We're going to sit with her. We're going to talk to her. We're going to take her on a tour of Ganawaga. We're going to give her a little bit of historical background about ourselves, you know, close proximity to the border. And I made it clear. I said, this is still Mohawk Nation territory as far as we're concerned, and extends into the U.S. So you can concentrate on Akwesasne because it is a problem area. But if this is still our territory and we consider it that, then you darn well have to start, you know, taking the issues that you're dealing with in Akwesasne and broaden them to outside of the confines of Akwesasne. There are our brother from Walpole Island, the Chippewa Nation. They cross every day. They go to Detroit. I think there's a ferry that they use. They go back and forth because they work in the U.S. They work in, and they're subject to harassment every day. And that was the question that was raised by the representative from the Chippewas, saying, you know, why is it this happens and elsewhere it doesn't happen? What's the problem? How come, you know, why do they treat us so differently there? You know, and they said, well, we have to look into it. We have to look into it.
They do have to look into it. Because, and if you look even, you know, for everyday stuff here in Ganawaga, if you want to, oh, let's go down to Boston, and you want to go down the 89.
Yeah.
Nobody likes to go to that border. That border seems to be one where, geez, we'll cross over. We'll cross over here. And then there are always certain borders that seem to be really problematic and never really, there's no good reason for it. Like, why would that one be a problem? And so there's so much when it comes to border crossing. Like you said at the beginning of the interview, our people go every day. There's people who go every week.
Yep.
Especially, you know, the retired guys, they head down there, get their check, they do their correspondence, they go to the, you know, Social Security, and or they just want to go to Applebee's. But they go, you know, often. People have those boxes to, you know, they get their mail down there. So it's been going on for so long, the issues, that sometimes you get numbed and you don't even fight some of the fights anymore. Yeah. Because when things are going smoothly, you just say, oh, well, they're not bothering me. So you forget about the bigger fight sometimes. How did the other chiefs, once this started to come out, how did they react?
Well, they began to jump in after that, you know, and began to make it clear, you know, that they were not satisfied with the status quo. And then the issues started to come out in terms of how they were being treated. And it went a little bit further, too. It went into which wasn't really the place for it, but it did come out in terms of retirees, you know, from who worked in the U.S. most of their lives, come back to Canada, retire, and are being taxed, or they're being harassed by the IRS on one side. Over here, it's Revenue Canada or a particular province they're in. So that came into the mix, and but otherwise, the dissatisfaction with, I guess, the categorization of our people, that really surfaced. And they said, what do you mean, you know? I said that. What the heck are you talking about? How do we suddenly become immigrants and refugees, you know? You know, whose idea was that? They claim, well, we don't know. This is what they tell us in Ottawa, you know?
That's going to steam up a few people.
Oh, here. It will, definitely.
I'm steamed up.
Yeah.
And you know me, I'm the calmest guy in the office. This one will probably be the door opener for further discussion, that's for sure. So when you have the lady from the region going to be meeting, what else do you foresee happening, and at what kind of timetable here?
Well, hopefully that kind of discussion with that particular person can then find its way, and you know, the issues that we have in terms of how we're being treated at the border can then begin to, if not totally correct the circumstances there, but at the very least begin, you know, to tone down what happens when we're coming back into Canada. All the questions, all the harassment, all the stuff that goes on over and over again, where, you know, wherever, like the border that you're afraid to go to, you know, instead of running out, maybe it'll begin to flatten out, you know, and begin to be more fair, if you will. You know, we made it clear that we understand, because one of the people from CBSA said, you know what, this is really, it's really become an issue since 9/11 over security and all that. I said, we agree. We understand that. And it's expected, but at the same time, it shouldn't interfere with our rights. But now that I understand the category we're in, I can see why now. You know, your people do what they damn well please. They don't care what we say, you know.
No wonder that the, you know, I know that your office, the Grand Chief's office, often signs off when people are applying for a passport.
Yeah.
Because there's no category that says Native American. And, you know, Canadian passport because you're Native American, born in Canada. There's not, yep. So basically, people are always upset. I know, you know, a lot of people will just, I'm not going to travel. I'm not going to go out there because I don't want my name on a Canadian passport. I don't consider myself Canadian. I'm not, you know, I can't get a red card, as they used to call it, from the Confederacy. I'm not eligible or whatever. So people are in limbo. So, That's something that bothers a lot of people. So they come to the office here, and you just sign that little thing that says, "I am getting this passport so I can travel, and I don't necessarily consider myself."
And I raised that issue there. I said, you know, even though there's many of us, I said I'm one of those that carries a Canadian passport. Still, I said when I got that passport. I made it quite clear that this is purely for travel. This doesn't give up my right to continue to be a Mohawk citizen first and foremost. And quite often when I'm traveling, you have to fill out entry card back into Canada. You know, I put that. I put Mohawk, then I put Canadian after that, /Canadian. They look at it, you know, quite often they'll ask. Sometimes I get pulled aside because of that. What does this mean? Well, I'll read it. It says I'm a Mohawk. Mohawk first, then I'm Canadian after that. If you want to categorize me as that. That's an imposed citizenship. I said, then the reason I have the reason why I have a Canadian passport is because there's no other way for me to go anywhere in the world, you know, as a result of this. So it's something that continues to plague us. And the only way that can be cured, I guess, and dealt with is when our form of identification is recognized by IATA, which is the huge world wide organization that approves of the various types of
passports
and all that, yeah. From different countries. When that happens, then you know, and I can actually foresee it happening sometime in the future, but that's going to take a gigantic effort by all the nations.
And there has to be some teamwork here because, yeah. Like in this instance, this meeting was done through Iroquois Caucus and some of the other neighboring, the Chippewas and, yeah. Like you say, so.
Oneidas.
The Oneidas, most and several Mohawk communities. Yeah. So in this case, you know, we hear all the time, for example, the Iroquois Nationals.
Yeah.
Have had problems. They go under the Haudenosaunee passport. What is the interaction right now in terms of that to try and find some sort of common understanding to maybe work together to find a way?
Unfortunately, I have to say there's not much. There are periodic discussions that take place, but there's so much on the table, you know. What's priority? What do you deal with first and foremost before you get to those kinds of issues? Can you isolate them, categorize them, and then we all jointly work together on that, you know? Or does it have to become part of a larger agenda of issues that concern everybody, you know? In the unity issue, you know, the unity amongst the non-traditional versus... I shouldn't say versus, but non-traditional and traditional groups in our communities, because it's right across the Haudenosaunee territory. It's there, you know that. So, but it's on an ongoing basis. on a daily basis, there are these issues, there are these problems. So we have to create our own victories, if you will. If Kahnawake or the Iroquois caucus, those communities, representatives have met with the Canadian Border Services Agency, is able to make some breakthroughs in certain areas, then certainly everybody benefits from it, you know, because it's not just for respective communities, it's for everybody.
I certainly won't stop you from doing what you have to do on the local basis,
yeah,
to like you say, get the woman in here for the region, and hopefully go further from there. So, well, it's something that is always a priority. I mean, every time you see the agenda for the Iroquois caucus, and every time the priorities come out, there's always border crossing on there, and it always seems like it's one step forward and two steps back.
Well, but, you know, you take, for example, and the gentleman that I'm going to speak about, Steve Thomas, he was at the meeting, and he spoke about a particular situation that he was in. He came from Akwesas. Actually, he was going to Six Nations, this is a couple of months back, for a border crossing meeting, and he had a brand new car, an American car. But he's from Cornwall Island, and he came around by Niagara Falls, the Rainbow Bridge, I think it's called. He was crossing there. They stopped him. They sent him back. So you can't bring that car with you, because you're from Canada and you have a U.S. vehicle, U.S. plates registered. So he went back. He went down to somewhere. He crossed over and came around. You know. So the inconsistencies at the borders, the Canadian borders is what really, I guess, is a problem. Now, we want that fixed for immediate relief. But you want it done. You want them to be consistent, but in the right way, not the wrong way.
So it's always a tightrope walk to make sure you do the right thing, so you don't sell out what you're trying to accomplish just to get some sort of relief, the quick fix. It's always an ongoing battle to make sure you do everything right.
But on a larger scale, the Canadian government, we need to start meeting with them. We need to start lobbying them in order for them to begin to come to an understanding that, you know, we are neither American, we are neither Canadian, we are not immigrants, we are not refugees, you know. And if it's not going to be the Jay Treaty, then certainly has to be something. If it's a modern day understanding arrangement, certainly something has to happen, you know, to reflect the historic relationship, you know, the War of 1812, all the various things that have happened over time that still continue to recognize as allies of Canada, you know, and as allies of Canada, you certainly can't say we're refugees or immigrants. Make up your mind, you know.
Well, and I know, like, people who will be listening to this, I'm sure they will be intrigued. They'll also probably say, well, you know, Joe Delarone works for the council, so he lobbed a few softballs at the Grand Chief. But in a couple of weeks, you'll actually go on K103 for the Party Line talk show, the MCK Friday. So at that point, it should be interesting to hear what other people are asking. Ross Montour asks some very good questions. Mm-hmm. So we'll get, you know, another set of questions that will get asked, because it's certainly, probably for most people, one of the top two or three issues, because, like you say, everybody goes there. People get nervous. Older people get really nervous. I remember my grandmother used to, one time, you know, we're coming back over the border, and she had a little Gaderi de Gakuit, a little medal, and my mother says to her, so, geez, Ma, what are you doing? She says, I'm praying to Kadri that they don't catch me. I brought whatever it was. She brought steak or whatever. And so, you know, people stress over that.
You see, and just on that issue too, I you know, I chose that meeting to come, you know, to deal with a lot of different matters. One of them I said was, let's be clear about something. I said, we are not smugglers. We don't smuggle. We exercise our rights as we see, you know, the need for it. You know, and then I said, you're constantly tobacco, alcohol, you know, I says those major products. Tobacco is our product. We did a little historical, you know, run-through on that, as we've done, as I've done on so many occasions. Tobacco is our product. When Europeans arrived here, especially the Dutch to begin with, they suddenly realized there was a commodity here, something that they could utilize. They said, and we traded that. We traded amongst the nations. We traded with, and it was a form of currency for us, you know. So it said way back when your ancestors first arrived here, we were in business with you, and that's what we were doing. And suddenly it became your product. Suddenly you knocked us out of the box. Commercially, it's yours. We can no longer utilize it for us, except if we do it in ceremonies and stuff like that. Keep it at that level, you know. And then we tried to do it your way. We tried to go and get the permits and all of that. That only worked for a little while. So no more permits. So we tried to do it your way. And further, you know, we're further out of the loop again. We're further pushed out. So our people said, "The heck with it. We're going to go from end to end, you know, the raw product to the manufacturing of it, to the packaging of it, putting our own stamps, doing whatever they need to do, and the resale of it, you know." So we had to do that. We had to come and get the raw product from across the border into Canada, you know, and here you are passing laws to prevent us from doing this, and you have to apply the customs rules and regulations while we're struggling with that. I said, did we stop? No, we're going to continue, because that's the only way we could continue to utilize our product.
And don't get me started on the North-South lack of trade, according to the Mike Mitchell case.
Yeah.
Well, you always did trade. Yes, we agree you traded east to west, but no, there was nothing north to south.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I mean, I still don't know how.
That is so stupid, you know.
I can't believe that. But
even they don't believe that, you know.
Yeah, that's another story for another day. But so to wrap up, so there will be a meeting with the border agency regional person, which then
it will be before the end of this month. Mm-hmm. Actually, it'll be in a couple of weeks.
Yep. So yeah,
we're working on that now. We've identified a date, and
well, it's possible that it happens actually before the next K103 talk show. Hopefully that happens, because it'll be really fresh, and we should be hearing a lot more.
Well,
as we
you know
on.
What? It's going to be on a Friday. It's going to be on a Friday. Maybe we can convince that person to go on the radio talk show.
Oh, that would be an interesting program.
Yeah,
that would be very, very interesting. Well, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
We'll keep everybody informed. Grand Chief Joseph Tokwiri Norton, it's been an interesting little while here this morning, and we got to do these shows a little more often.
Yes.
Yeah, we got to get back in the groove here, because there's so much going on these
days.
And that's probably and that's really part of the reason we haven't had a chance to do these programs, because there is actually so much going on that it's hard to stay on task sometimes to do some of these things that I think people actually depend on and are happy to, you know. I'm happy that we do these shows. People also have given us comments. So we'll do it again soon. And thanks so much for joining us today on The Corner Office. Nyao Goa.
Yo.
This has been The Corner Office with political press attaché Joe Delarone and Grand Chief Joseph Tokwiri Norton.